You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I cover the Chicago Bears for NBC Sports Chicago, and I cover the NFL for Pro Football Focus. Locked On Bears is your podcast destination for daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. And today, we're diving into the All-22 film from Sunday night's loss. And we're going to try and figure out what exactly went wrong. Because offensively, you saw the team go stale even as early as the late second quarter. And then defensively, they had no answers for Aaron Rodgers as he mounted his comeback. So we'll kind of go through what went wrong on both sides of the ball and see how we can figure this out and see how the Bears might adjust moving forward. So I've got my own notes from my All-22 film review, just going through all the plays today. But before we get into a lot of that, I want to go to your questions. The loyal listeners here of Locked On Bears calling and texting in to our voicemail line. Again, the phone number is 312-620-8590. And so I want to first get to a few questions that will ultimately lead into and touch on some of the things I'm going to later, and then we can kind of get more involved in some of my individual thoughts on this game.
Hey, Lauren, this is Chad calling from Nashville, Tennessee. I grew up in the Chicago area for the first 18 years of my life, though, and I am a Bears fan, obviously. I was curious what you think about giving Roquan the start over Kwiatkowski this week, given Russell Wilson's penchant for scrambling and being quick on his feet. It just seems like Roquan would be a better match to contain him. Thanks. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Chad, for calling in from Nashville, Tennessee. And this Roquan Smith question is going to be one I think we have every week until he actually takes over as the starting inside linebacker. And I mean, anytime you can get a more athletic player on the field, there's a big advantage to that. And I think it won't be too long before we probably see Roquan take the field. But I'm not necessarily overly concerned that Russell Wilson specifically is going to warrant it. That I know, I mean, we know Russell Wilson is a shifty and electric quarterback, but you know, it's not as though he rushes for 100 yards a game, and it's not as though the Bears didn't deal with someone like that with Aaron Rodgers last week. And just individually with Kwiatkowski, you know, he was targeted 5 times and gave up 5 catches last week, but going through the tape, it wasn't as though he was getting burned pretty regularly. There were, I think, 2 of those 5 catches he was kind of in a bad position in coverage, and the rest of them, it's kind of these, you know, where he's in a zone in the middle of the field and Rodgers dumps it to the guy in front of him and he makes the tackle and the guy gains 7 or 8 yards. And that's just kind of where Kwiatkowski was. He was where he was supposed to be on the play. And, you know, it just worked out for the offense to create some yards. So, you know, there were very few opportunities where it really felt like Kwiatkowski's lack of speed was like drastically hurting him. I mean, again, more speed is always better in the NFL, but I didn't find him to be a particular liability in that sense, and he was phenomenal against the run, as always, in that game. So I think we're going to see Kwiatkowski again. I think there's a lot of value to getting Roquan Smith more involved, and before long, he will get more involved, but you don't want to rush him out there if mentally he's not totally there in the defense, and maybe he's not in 100% football shape. It's because you have something in Kwiatkowski that is performing adequately, I'm not in a huge rush there. And I think containing Russell Wilson is more on the edge defenders, holding the pocket and keeping him contained in there, and the interior pass rushers not giving him a lane up the middle. And we saw last week against Aaron Rodgers, Vic Fangio used Leonard Floyd a lot as that QB spy. And I wonder, you know, maybe Roquan could take some of that role, but they like to have Roquan dropping back in coverage a little bit more. So I think they have other answers for Russell Wilson, even though we do want to see Roquan Smith get on the field.
John from Pensacola, I would just like to say that even though the Bears lost, it was still an awesome game. And I don't understand why we keep having major lapses in defense in the second half, in the fourth quarters. And we like we forgot how to run the ball. You know, Jordan Howard was doing awesome, and Tariq Cohen always does well, so I'm not sure why we stopped running when that was the strength of our game, even last night. So we should have kept running, even though it got more and more nervous from the quarterback standpoint. That's when you should run the ball even more. Anyway, those are my thoughts. And even though it was a loss, it was still an awesome game to watch. Thanks.
Thanks, John, for calling in, and I especially appreciate John giving us a call because he's been a long-time listener. He's active with us on Twitter and always involved, so special shout-out to John giving us a call here. And to go into this running game a little bit, you know, when I watched it the first time, too, I felt like they got away from the running game there down the stretch, and they did to some extent, but it wasn't as abandoned as I thought it was when I went back through and watched. And it really kind of started in the second quarter. You know, early on there, they had a third and one where they handed it off to Jordan Howard up the middle and got nowhere. There was a lot of penetration on the interior, and it was just kind of messy. And the Bears ended up punting on fourth and one there. And well, they got a delayed game, punted on fourth and five. And then later on in that second half, in that second quarter, you know, they ran a little bit and then they had a penalty. It was a hold. And then they had first and long, and then they passed three straight plays before they ended up trying to go for it on fourth down and throwing again. And Trubisky getting sacked on that play and fumbling when he ran into Bobby Massey's butt. It was Trubisky's version of the butt fumble. Then you kind of get down towards the end of the second quarter and they abandon it a little bit as they get into that 2-minute warning and, you know, some Trubisky passes there, but a short drive, three and out ultimately there. Then third quarter, you might remember the first drive of the third quarter, the Bears moved the ball pretty well and they drove down into the red zone, ultimately came up short, but you know, they ran the ball fairly consistently on that drive. Still probably more passes than you'd like. I think it's a quick count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in a row. If you know, and then another run. So, you know, you want to see some more running there, but at least they were able to move the ball to start the third quarter. But then the next drive, three and out, and it's three straight passes. It was two screens in a row, which we'll talk about a little bit later on, but three passes, three and out. That's where you're seeing the running game get away. The next drive is a three and out with a run on first down, but you don't see them come back to it on that third and one where he throws to Deion Sims. So I think part of the issue was just that they couldn't extend drives, and that because they had back-to-back three and outs there, which we're also going to get into more, yeah, they didn't have as many opportunities to run the ball. And then as they get farther into the fourth quarter, they came out throwing again on their next drive. And that's where you want to see more running. But again, they drive down on that drive all the way into the red zone, stall in the red zone on third and two, and take the field goal again. At least the offense was moving. You know, it wasn't as though the lack of running game killed them on that drive, but you would have liked to see it more. And then the final drive comes with 2:13 left in the clock. They had two timeouts. They could have run the ball, but I can see where, you know, first play, you get that ineligible receiver downfield, and then you have first and long, so you got to pass. You don't have to pass, but you probably pass on first and long. Don't get much, so then you have second and medium and third and long, and, you know, then you're not really running there. And then by the time you get another first down, there's a 1:40 left on the clock. I can at least see in that situation not wanting to go to the running game because of the clock and because of the situation. I still thought you probably could have squeezed one or two in there. And generally speaking, over those final three quarters, they should have run the ball more, yes. But I didn't necessarily find on second watch that the lack of running game necessarily doomed them. You know, I think there were a couple key plays, a couple third and shorts where I would have run the ball, and those ultimately were failed offensive plays. But on the whole, the running game wasn't necessarily abandoned, and the lack of running game, I didn't feel totally limited their success. I thought there were other things holding them back, which is what we're going to get into in our next couple segments. Now, if you're a regular listener here at Locked On Bears, you come to this podcast for in-depth Chicago Bears analysis, and that's exactly what we're doing today. But it's hard to find that level of analysis too many other places out there, especially in the written form. Nowadays, it's a lot of content aggregation. I mean, heck, that's a lot of what I do, but it's a lot of quick hitting stuff, big picture stuff, and you don't get as much of that good in-depth written work anymore. But the one place that I think you can really still find it is The Athletic. And I highly recommend you get a subscription. I have a subscription to The Athletic. It's a really simple model for them. You know, no ads, no pop-ups, no autoplay videos, just authentic, in-depth coverage written by journalists that know their teams and analysts that know football. It's, you know, it's a subscription-based service, and it gives you better coverage, a better reading experience. You know, it goes beyond just game recaps and speculation, and provides that smarter analysis and deeper perspective, not only about the Bears, but across the NFL. I mean, there's athletics branches for most cities, most major markets across the NFL. The Athletic Chicago has Kevin Fishbane and Dan Durkin covering the Bears, but your subscription gets you access to the local and the national content. They just added some really big national writers for their NFL site. They got Jay Glazer, they got Ted Wynn, they got Dane Brugler doing the draft, they got Mike Lombardi. Lots of phenomenal content. It is worth every penny. And if you're interested in signing up for The Athletic, we can get you a special discount here with Locked On Bears. If you go to theathletic.com/LockedOnBears, you get 40% off your subscription. Brings it down to just $2.99 a month. I mean, that's $3 a month. That's like as much as one coffee at Starbucks. It covers a whole month of high quality Chicago Bears coverage at The Athletic. Later on this week on the podcast, we're going to be joined by Ben Fennell from The Athletic Wisconsin, who's one of the best film breakdown people on Twitter and on the web. And we're going to break down some of this week one tape together as well. And so if you want to be able to read his work, if you want to read Dan Durkin's film work, he does a solid, solid job as well. You got to subscribe to The Athletic. And again, the link, theathletic.com/LockedOnBears, gets you 40% off for that first year. Like I said, I have a subscription and I could not recommend it enough. Support great writing and support The Athletic in the process. We're breaking down the All-22 from Bears-Packers today on Locked On Bears. And again, I should thank you for wanting to listen to a podcast about such a stunning defeat for the Bears. But this is how you learn from your mistakes, right? You go back through, figure out what went wrong, and then, in theory, the Bears should avoid making those same mistakes again. And so to kind of set us up here for this, so for some of my notes here, I want to play one more voicemail question for you. He kind of asks about everything I'm going to talk about and goes across the spectrum here. So I'll let him set the stage a little bit, because I think he does a good job of asking the right questions as to what went wrong on Sunday night.
Sonny from Chicago, Illinois. I got a question, I guess, as many Bears fans do since last night's game. Kind of what happened in the second quarter. I can't even blame the defense too much. Besides the obvious Fuller missed interception, and Prince was horrible last night. Give up 2 touchdowns, I believe. But what happened to offense in the second half? It seemed that we just took our foot off the pedal. I mean, Mitch just looked absolutely horrifiedly scared there in the second half. It's unexplainable. Is that due to play calling, which some of it is kind of weird, to be honest, 3rd-and-1. I know we went for a pass. I mean, personally, even if it was 4th-and-1, I would have went for the run just because Rodgers is that good. You cannot give him a ball back. Deep down, I had a feeling they was going to score a touchdown. My question is, what happened to the offense in the second half? And also, what happened to the defense in the second half? They weren't as dominant anymore. They were slowly shipping us away with the short passes, underneath passes. But unfortunately, we gave up those big plays. Kwiatkowski, I believe it was, he was horrible. He was super slow. But kind of what happened? Why weren't we able to get to the Rodgers like we did in the first half? And then would you blame Nagy maybe for some of the play calling, and kind of like what happened to Mitch? The loss hurts, but you know what? If somebody told me that we were going to nearly beat Green Bay at Lambeau a year ago, I'd probably laugh at them. We still have a lot of positives to take out of the game. I'm not entirely disappointed. As Nagy said, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. We still have 15 games left. So bear down and keep up the good job. Thank you.
Thanks, Sonny, for calling in your question there. And there were maybe four or five questions there. So we're going to kind of separate this out, offense and defense here, and kind of go through what went wrong in the second half and kind of what changed after both sides of the ball had such a hot start. Let's start with the defense, because we talked a lot about Nagy and Trubisky yesterday, and I'm sure we're going to be talking a lot more about them as the week goes on. So first half, you know, first quarter, you know, there was this idea that they pretty well shut down Aaron Rodgers. And I'm not, you know, after going back through, I'm not as totally convinced. You know, there was, like, for example, in that first quarter, there was a play where Rodgers hit Ty Montgomery for 48 yards down the left sideline. He just smoked Danny Trevathan out of the backfield. It was called back because of holding. And, you know, it seemed like they're playing very good defense. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to take much away from them, but the Packers were close on a lot of third downs. They punted on a couple fourth and shorts. And, you know, the Bears just came up and made some tackles right short of the first down. So the Packers were moving the ball a little bit with Rodgers on the field. And it, you know, it felt like they were maybe getting closer to something before, of course, Rodgers got hurt. There were also some inaccurate throws from Aaron Rodgers where he overthrew guys running down the sidelines a couple times. And, you know, he made some mistakes. And the Packers offense was slow out of the gate and a little bit rusty and a little bit sloppy. And the Bears did some really good things. They got some great pressure on him. They seemed to be really keying in on the running game. And I don't know if they were just run blitzing when it was Jamal Williams in the backfield on early downs. They seemed to be really going in. But Kwiatkowski getting right up to the line of scrimmage. Adrian Amos right up to the line of the scrimmage. Maybe they're just, you know, keying in on it pretty aggressively and reading and recognizing very quickly when the Packers are running versus passing. But they were pretty good on the running game there, and Rodgers gave them a couple in the passing game and threw short of the sticks a few times in the passing game. But it wasn't this abysmal Packers offensive performance. It's always impressive when you shut out Aaron Rodgers for a quarter and a half, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't as though it was, I just didn't think it was a total dominant defensive performance until, you know, DeShone Kizer comes in. But even Kizer, you know, he had passed for 29 yards and 11 yards on that first drive and got the Packers down to the red zone. I mean, ultimately then he fumbles and Khalil Mack strips it out of his hands. But, you know, Kizer was moving the ball some against the Bears defense. And, you know, it's the pick six, a little bit of right place, right time, I think in both cases for Khalil Mack, where, you know, Kizer runs into Khalil Mack on that first one. Khalil Mack didn't beat Brian Bulaga. Kizer just ran into him. So, you know, all the credit to Khalil Mack for being aware and ripping it, but it wasn't a pass rush move that won there. And then on the screen, I mean, Kizer's thrown to a spot and Khalil Mack just happened to be there and it went right into his hands. Right place, right time, deserves credit for that. But again, it wasn't necessarily just this phenomenal individual play, as more taking advantage of what the offense gave him. I mean, overall, in that first half, the Bears were winning the battle in the trenches. And that was big. That was really big and a key to why they were limiting what the Packers could do. But as the game goes along here, it became more and more apparent how bland Vic Fangio was getting in coverage. That I can literally tell you for a fact, the Bears ran three different coverages all game. And, you know, there's different adjustments off of that, and so it's not exactly three, but every single play was either cover one, which is man-to-man coverage with a single deep safety, and then you know, another player usually in the middle of the field in a zone, but man-to-man coverage elsewhere, or cover three, which is, again, a single deep safety zone with your outside corners also getting a deep third of the field and four guys in zones underneath. And then they ran a little bit of cover six, which is a split between cover two and cover four. And the key distinction here is that cover six was the only time where they have two deep safeties in their coverage. But the vast majority of the game was single deep safety, cover one, and cover three. They did not run a single snap of cover two or cover four in the entire game. And that's where I point to thing number one of a lack of an adjustment, that when you get to the second half, Aaron Rodgers was expecting single deep coverages, a lot of cover one man-to-man, you know, and then some cover three, which can at times look like man-to-man depending on the route combinations that are being run. And so the Packers come in the second half and run a lot more routes with, you know, or route concepts within breaking routes. That, you know, offenses, you build in route combinations and plays that are coverage beaters. You have your man coverage beaters, you have your cover two beaters, your cover three beaters, your cover four beaters, where you just know that if you run this route combination against that coverage, the responsibilities for those players in that coverage will allow you to have a receiver open. And the Packers were running cover one and cover three beaters, and you didn't see Fangio run much cover six to adjust, and no cover two or cover four. And I know that's a lot of cover in there, but what you're seeing is a lot of players attacking inside. And when you have Kyle Fuller on the right side playing off coverage pretty consistently, there's a lot of free space there. And that when Davante Adams runs slant after slant after slant, Fuller gives him a lot of space when he makes that in-cut, and Rodgers was hitting that for a lot of free yards. And then, of course, when Fuller does come up and play up, Rodgers throws over the top to Geronimo Allison for that perfect dime ball for a touchdown. I mean, there's nothing more, really, that Kyle Fuller could do in coverage on that play because it was just absolutely perfect. But it's a single deep safety. If there had been two deep safeties, you have some help there over top. But instead, you're one-on-one that entire length of the field, and that's tough for a player to really keep up with. So criticism number one for Vic Fangio is just mix up the coverages. I mean, this is primarily a single deep safety team. That is their bread and butter, and I understand that. But boy, when Aaron Rodgers starts tearing you up a little bit, that would be the indication that, you know what, throw something a little bit different at him. And we just saw cover one and cover three over and over again, single deep safety, and Rodgers just kept attacking in-breaking routes, taking that free space. Similarly, Bryce Callahan in the slot versus Randall Cobb. Callahan's lining up 6, 7, 8 yards off the line of scrimmage a lot, and they'll just run these quick little ins with Randall Cobb where it's this free space, or a quick out with a slant where Callahan has to kind of fight through another receiver to try and get there, and it's a free 6, 7 yards for Randall Cobb. And those just kept adding up, and Aaron Rodgers gets in a rhythm, and you know then you start adding the pace to this and go up-tempo, and that's really what killed the Bears defense. And I mean, you could have just put Bryce Callahan up a little bit more on Randall Cobb, but Callahan versus Cobb was a matchup that the Packers just ate up in that second half in particular. And, you know, you saw it again on that 75-yard touchdown, which I want to touch on in a second. But, you know, the other big thing was this up-tempo attack that, you know, they start running these plays off in the third quarter. The Bears defense gets tired. And, you know, as a defensive coordinator, I'm not sure there's a lot you can do to stop that. I mean, I would have tried maybe some more three-man rushes and, you know, take away all the quick throws and see what you could do there. I mean, you got to try some different stuff. But what really happened here was that the Packers go up-tempo and drive down the field on the Bears. Okay, you can survive. But the Bears offense comes out for their second drive in the third quarter. Like we talked about earlier, Bears go 3 and out. Defense goes back on the field. Then it's up-tempo, up-tempo, up-tempo. Geronimo Allison gets the touchdown. Bears offense comes out again to start the fourth quarter, 3 and out. And the defense goes back on the field. And so you could really see the pass rush slow down. Khalil Mack is tired. Akeem Hicks is really tired. Roy Robertson-Harris tired. And you just, Aaron Rodgers had that time. There wasn't a lot of pressure. And then, you know, Prince Amukamara gets smoked on a double move by Davante Adams and runs for 51 yards. And then a few plays later in the red zone, they throw short to Davante Adams. He just jukes Prince Amukamara. One really terrible drive for Amukamara. I thought the rest of the game, he was solid. He was fine. Maybe he was just worn out by then. Maybe he was getting complacent or lazy or whatever. And those were the words Eddie Jackson used to describe the defense after the game. But he had one terrible drive that almost single-handedly let the Packers drive down for a touchdown. Outside of that, he was okay. So, I mean, that's where you can't blame one guy here, like we talked about yesterday. Can't blame Amukamara for a whole game. Can't blame Callahan for giving up a lot. And, you know, you even look on that Randall Cobb big play. 75 yards. I mean, Eddie Jackson dove after the ball, and it was a tight window, and Jackson almost got his hands on that. And he might be the one guy that you don't really give much blame to here, because the Bears were in cover six on that play. One of the few plays where you're supposed to have two deep safeties. Jackson leaves as one of the deep safeties to take a guy going across the middle of the field. And Bryce Callahan is essentially supposed to replace him because Kyle Fuller takes his guy across the middle of the field, which was, I believe, Davante Adams. But what happens is Fuller and Callahan both cover the receiver going across the middle. And then Jackson leaves his spot to come down and help on Cobb. And you can see both Fuller and Callahan are looking at Rodgers as he throws the ball, are still looking at Rodgers as the ball gets to Cobb, and they continue to run the opposite direction following their receivers. And they're extremely slow to turn around and start running and chasing. And I'm just sitting there going, what are you guys doing? I mean, first of all, you can't have both of them chase the same guy across the middle of the field. That when you have zone responsibility like this, someone has to stay back and hold the other side, especially as Rodgers extends the play with his legs. But instead, both of them go across the middle of the field. Both of them are out of position to then go back and help Cobb, and both were extremely slow to get back involved in the play. They vacated that entire side of the field, so Cobb had just free field to run down 75 yards and score, and it just epitomized a poor performance from a lot of different guys on that play. I mean, even Ty Montgomery was wide open for a touchdown, streaking down the right sideline. He beat Leonard Floyd right out of the backfield, and Rodgers could have easily hit him in stride and had a 75-yard touchdown that way, too. I mean, there were two ways for a 75-yard touchdown, which both of which could have been prevented if one of those cornerbacks had stayed on that left side of the defense, right side of the offense, in that cover six. But that was vacated, that space was opened up, and the Packers playmakers did the rest. So you can see with this Bears defense, it's just not one thing. It's Vic Fangio not switching up the coverages. It's players out of position, whether it's Amukamara on one drive or Fuller giving too much space off or Callahan giving too much space off, the Packers adjusting, and the Bears didn't. I mean, it's got to be frustrating, but it's in theory a learning opportunity for everybody involved, and I guess maybe you want to get this out of the way in week one, but a lot to improve on moving forward, and you can really say the same thing about the offense. That's where we'll go next on Locked On Bears. Lack of adjustments was the name of the game on Sunday night. We saw the Bears offense come out hot, like we did with the defense, and you know, it was working. We saw, I thought, a more confident Mitchell Trubisky at that point in the game. We saw the offense throw a lot of different things at the Packers, and the Packers didn't necessarily know what was hitting them. And we talked yesterday about how too much of it was gimmicky, and I think we'll see Nagy get away from that. But the one thing that stood out to me as they got into the second quarter and the second half is that there were a lot of open receivers on the field. In particular, Trey Burton, the tight end, that especially in that first half, there were two or three plays where he's streaking down the sideline or down the middle of the field, and Trubisky just doesn't see him, whether it's by design because Trubisky's looking elsewhere or if pressure kind of got to him in the pocket. There were different reasons for it, but the result was still the same. Trey Burton was open a lot, especially in that second quarter. You could see plays where you see a Bears player throw their hands up after the Trubisky throw the ball, where they're just like, come on, I was open, like, throw it to me, you know, stuff like that. And that can certainly be frustrating. And, you know, it was frustrating to see a lot of the screens continue to fail. That there was a spot in the third quarter, which we'll get to in a little bit, where first and second down, they run screens that go absolutely nowhere. And a lot of the problem on the screens, well, two things. One, the wide receivers really struggled to block the Packers' defensive backs. Anthony Miller was bad at screen blocking. Taylor Gabriel was bad at screen blocking. Allen Robinson was okay at screen blocking. I mean, the blocking wasn't there. But also, there were times when the Bears just didn't have numbers to that side of the field. That the number of blockers equaled or was less than the number of defenders, and the receiver's just not going to have any space to work in those situations. So you would like to see your quarterback check out of that play or, you know, switch to the run or do whatever it's going to take to not run that screen. And it made me wonder if, you know, there were a lot of plays in this game where the Bears get to the line of scrimmage with 7 seconds left on the play clock, and there's not time to switch out the play if the play call is not getting in soon enough and they're not getting to the line of scrimmage soon enough. So I wondered if at times that was an issue where there's so little time on the play clock that Trubisky isn't able to change the play and audible to something else and make those checks at the line of scrimmage. And I think getting the play call in quicker moving forward would be a pretty easy first step towards more consistency. Then as the game went on, we really saw Mitchell Trubisky's pocket presence deteriorate. And I'm putting out a piece that goes more in depth with the visual here on Trubisky's pocket presence tomorrow at Bears Wire. But to kind of talk through it here, he was very, very quick to leave a pocket even before the pressure got there, especially in the second half. In the first half, and even, you know, the first couple drives, you see him go through his progressions, stand in the pocket, even when there's pressure, just kind of sidestep it, keep his eyes downfield and deliver. And that's exactly what you want to see from your young quarterback. But once the pressure started going and the game kept going on and the score and the lead kept dwindling, Trubisky got real happy feet in the pocket. He was hearing and seeing ghosts. And I mean, the Packers were sending three-man rushes at Mitchell Trubisky, and he'd take off on a scramble. And there was no reason to take off for the scramble there. He needs to stay in the pocket and continue to look downfield because, like I said, there were open receivers. I'm seeing open receivers on these plays. And Mitch, he's looking at one and maybe two if it's a kind of a two-man read with one read, you're reading a defender or two on one side of the field. He makes that read. If it's not there, he was taken off. And that is not what you want in these crunch time, big game situations from your quarterback. A lot of quarterbacks can look good when everything's going well, but when things went bad, Trubisky went bad too, especially in that pocket and missing guys downfield and ultimately hurting his offense because those scrambles just weren't as effective. You saw him take a couple sacks where he's tackled short of the line of scrimmage when he's scrambling outside of the pocket. And I mean, you'd be better off throwing it away in that kind of a situation. I mean, it's better than taking the 7-yard sack in the pocket, but most of the time there was no immediate threat of real pressure in the pocket, and he's still taken off, and it affected his accuracy. You know, his footwork started to go, and he'd have a couple passes that just would either sail on him or put out too far out in front, and his accuracy really declined there as the pocket presence declined as the game went on. You could see as they got into the fourth quarter, like Nagy simplifying again for Trubisky, maybe trying to get him in rhythm, but I think that was what hurt them a lot down the stretch. That in the first half, I think you saw a little bit more of an open offense of, you know, bigger, big boy progressions, longer progressions, full field reads where he has to identify the coverage and then find his receiver. And especially on that last drive in the 2 minute and under, it's snap, read, throw, or bail. I mean, there's no, you didn't see him work his way across the field. Mitchell Trubisky would pick a side of the field and he's either throwing to that side of the field or he's not throwing at all. And that was disappointing. I mean, those were some Dowell Loggins type things that we saw last year that were all too common throughout the game or throughout the games in 2017 and just kind of came back a little bit. I mean, it's still more creative and just generally better route concepts and play calling with Nagy calling the one read plays, but it was still, I thought, was limiting this Bears offense. And, you know, it was forcing Trubisky to be a little bit too quick. He was hurrying himself. And I really felt like in that final drive of the game, it was pretty much all on Mitch. There was bad mechanics and overthrows and leaving the pocket too early. I mean, the final play, that 4th and 10, was garbage. I mean, that was an absolute garbage play. Your fullback, Michael Burton, is on the field in shotgun on 4th and 10. I mean, it just blows my mind that he's on the field. And you have your outside receivers running, you had three receivers running verticals, which, again, maybe you want to have a route with a break past the sticks instead of just forcing your quarterback to potentially throw a vertical. He ultimately is sacked and the game ends, but man, that 4th and 10 play was just absolutely horrendous. And, you know, as bad as Trubisky had been on that drive, the head coach just did him no favors when it came down to the stretch. So really, offensively, it was bad play calls. You know, back-to-back screens to start that drive in the third quarter for a 3-and-out, 3rd and 1 pass to Deion Sims. It was a bad call on that one. Trubisky made a bad throw. And it was a lot of these, there were too many of these plays where you have two receivers running routes and everybody else in pass protection. Saw that 3 or 4 times. It's a max protect look. And the Packers weren't getting that much of a pass rush on Trubisky. They weren't getting a lot of pressure. So I don't know why they went back to that. I mean, you're just limiting what your quarterback can do. You have two receivers running against 5, 6 guys in coverage. It didn't work for the Bears offense. So there was some staleness there, some poor play calling decisions, a little bit of getting away from the run like we talked about, and then Trubisky really looking like an inexperienced young quarterback. And like we've kind of talked about, a lot of that is to be expected. He started 13 games in his NFL career. He started 13 games in his college career. He is a young developing quarterback. And Matt Nagy he's a first-year head coach, and he's still learning about these situations and kind of how to handle it. I mean, this guy has called six games of play calling in the NFL. He's inexperienced, too. And that was one of the big concerns about him taking over as the head coach, and one of my concerns. But now we're going to see how Matt Nagy handles adversity, and none of those inexperienced excuses apply to Vic Fangio, who I think deserves a lot of blame for the breakdown against Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers did some phenomenal Aaron Rodgers plays, but the Bears made it easy on him on a number of opportunities there in the fourth quarter. So it was a mess on both sides of the ball. Hopefully it's a little bit clearer what type of a mess it was after talking through on this podcast here. I know we're going long, but too much we can learn from this tape. I mean, I still have a good half to full page of notes here that I didn't even get to about some of the tendencies on the Bears offense. Hopefully we'll have some time to get to that on our next episode with Ben Fennell from The Athletic Wisconsin. Again, 40% off The Athletic if you go to theathletic.com/LockedOnBears to sign up. But we'll be breaking down his observations kind of from the other side. And for those of you not thrilled with some of the discussions we've had with Peter Bukowski, I promise you that Mr. Ben Fennell is a pro's pro. He does all 22 stuff. Like, he works for the Philadelphia Eagles in their video department, and he breaks down tape on the Packers for The Athletic. I mean, he is he's just an NFL mind who happens to cover the Green Bay Packers, and I'm really looking forward to getting his thoughts on the game, because he's going to see things that, I mean, we both looked at the same tape, and he's going to see twice as many things as I did and have a ton of great insights. So I cannot recommend that episode enough. I'm excited to record it. I honestly am. So make sure you subscribe to Locked On Bears to keep up with all of our daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. It's been really analysis heavy this week. We'll be crossing over with Locked On Seahawks later on to kind of preview that game. But as the Bears news comes in as well, we'll be talking about it. The regular season is less of a newsworthy time and more of a game-worthy time. So that's what we're breaking down. It's football season. I'm loving it. I hope you're loving it. And I hope, even in spite of Sunday's loss, you still find a reason to bear down.